Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. It's the Thursday of election week, and already Governor Deval Patrick has gone back to governing. Soon, the state's 10 Democratic representatives will go back to representing. Here in Massachusetts, the election season was exciting, but election night? It was kind of a yawn. No major upsets, no huge swings, and everything was pretty much decided by daybreak. Not so in the rest of New England. In Maine, the newly elected Republican governor says he'll tell President Barack Obama to go to hell. In Rhode Island, it was the Democratic candidate telling the president to shove it. Here at Radio Boston, we spent a lot of time covering the Massachusetts races. So today, we're going to turn to some experts who've been covering the rest of New England to find out what happened. First up, we check in with A.J. Higgins, State House Bureau Chief for Maine Public Broadcasting, where the governor-elect, Paul LePage, was a Tea Party favorite.
Paul LePage was, in fact, backed by the Tea Party, which here in Maine is sort of a I guess as well as in the rest of the country, is sort of a collection of different groups who sort of unite under this new independence banner. But one of the most prominent members of that group, a fellow by the name of Pete Heron, was with LePage at his campaign headquarters on election night.
In what ways is Paul LePage conservative?
I think he is very much of a welfare reformist. You know, there's the perception that was driven home during his campaign that perhaps welfare benefits become too easy to obtain, and people in Maine stay on welfare too long and start looking at these entitlement programs as a way of life rather than a temporary helping hand. He's also tends to be very conservative on social issues. He is an opponent of same-sex marriage. He is an opponent of a woman's right to choose. And in those ways, I think is probably, you could argue, out of step with, at least on the abortion issue, with the majority of Mainers.
Now, LePage won in a three-way race. There was also an independent, also a Democrat. It was really the Democrat that got whomped. I mean, the independent came quite close to getting the same number of votes that LePage did.
Yes, from a practical perspective, your statement is correct. Technically, there were actually five candidates on the ballot here in Maine. We had two other unenrolled or independent candidates who did not trend very high in the race. But to your point, yeah, Libby Mitchell, Elizabeth Mitchell, the Democratic candidate, Maine's first woman Speaker of the House, she did not even capture 20% of the vote here statewide, and I'm sure she was devastated.
Now, LePage has been a bit intemperate in his comments since he won or during the campaign. At one point, didn't he say that he wouldn't be shy about telling Obama to go to hell over his policies?
I'll try to put this in the context that it was delivered. Paul LePage made that remark to a group of fishermen on the coast who are vehemently opposed to federal policies as they pertain to catch limits. You could actually say that, you know, he really was just attempting to play to this audience that he had. On the other hand, only 2 or 3 months before, President Obama, you know, was decided to spend a few days on Mount Desert Island in Bar Harbor and Acadia National Park right here in Maine. And, you know, it wasn't a bad tourist season this year, but things really, really picked up after that visit. So, you know, it seemed sort of at cross purposes to make that kind of a remark when a coastal region was so clearly positively impacted by the president's visit.
Now, on LePage's biography, he has a pretty interesting backstory. Is that right?
He does. He does have an interesting backstory, and as far as I know, it's 100% authentic. He was from a large Franco-American family in Lewiston.
18 siblings?
That's correct. And also, from what I understand, what he said is an abusive home, an abusive father. He lived on the streets. He grew up in some stables, worked in a agricultural situations, and basically put himself through school. You know, he's very much of a self-made man and understands the value of education, understands the value of hard work, has a lot of positive qualities in those areas. At the same time, he's a guy who acknowledges that he really can't quite let go of his past, you know, and I think, you know, I think he said words to the effect that, you know, you can take a man off the streets, but you can't take the streets out of the man, or something to that effect, and that side of Paul LePage will surface when he's challenged.
And now he's governor of Maine.
You got it.
A.J. Higgins, thanks for the update.
Thank you.
Now let's move south to New Hampshire. John Greenberg is executive editor of New Hampshire Public Radio, and he says the GOP had a huge win in the Granite State.
Yeah, I mean, it was just enormous. I mean, I've been around the state for, you know, nearly 15 years, and in some ways, what we saw is a return to the state that I saw when I first got here. I mean, it's always had this strong Republican leaning. It is rightly called a swing state. And you got to remember, there are a lot of people here who, even though they started increasingly electing Democrats, they remained—they identified themselves as independents, and it's sort of part of the DNA of this state to be skeptical of government and to be wary of spending. And those were really the defining issues in this election.
And in terms of how many seats Republicans captured, is it fair to say that basically everything available to them they took?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, certainly at the federal level, they did. The important exception here is that our governor remained Democratic. But essentially what you saw people doing is making an exception in the case of the governor and then voting Republican pretty much all the way through. And if you take a look at what happened to the state Senate, we've not seen in a long, long time 19 Republican senators to just 5 Democratic senators. It's always been a lot closer. And if you take a look at the House, I mean, it's essentially 3-1 in a legislature that's got about 400 people. And that is an extraordinary sweep for the Republicans.
And, John, I understand that you have a Democratic congressman in New Hampshire who gave up his seat to run for Senate, and that turned into a disaster in many ways for him. Can you tell us about that?
Well, I mean, that is Paul Hodes. He was in a congressional district that, if any congressional district was going to remain Democratic, it was that one. He, a long time ago, about a year and a half ago, said, "I am going to run for the open Senate seat," which was being vacated by a Republican senator, Judd Gregg. And he lost by a very, very wide margin. Now, you could say it turned out badly. It certainly did for Paul Hodes. The question is, would he have held on to his congressional seat had he run for that seat? By no means in this election was that a slam dunk.
And let me just make sure I follow that. So he gave up his seat in Congress to run for Senate. Not only did he lose his Senate run, but his old vacant congressional seat went to a Republican.
That's exactly right.
What do you think drove this GOP surge in New Hampshire?
I do think that our politics is dominated by the people who are undeclared. So they are the independent voters. And these people are more likely to be fiscal conservatives and socially liberal. In a lot of respects, they sort of resemble what the Republican Party used to be before 1980, 1985. So how they go determines the outcome of our elections. One thing that struck me is when I was talking to people who were supporting Republican candidates, they were very worried about the amount of spending that they saw the federal government doing. They were very worried about what was going to happen with the health insurance reform. I can't tell you the number of people who are retired and have insurance benefits who felt that their insurance benefits were at risk because of this. Now, whether that was warranted or not, the worry was extremely authentic.
John Greenberg, thanks very much for the update on New Hampshire.
You're welcome.
And finally, continuing our trip down the New England coastline, let's go to our southerly neighbor, Rhode Island, or as voters there assured on Tuesday, the state of Rhode Island and Providence Plantations. David Scharfenberg is the news editor of the Providence Phoenix, and he joins me now in the studio. David, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
David, before we talk about the governor's race, so tell us quickly about that long name that the voters decided to keep for the state rather than just have a chance to abbreviate it.
Yes, Rhode Islanders, like all New Englanders, have a pretty deep attachment to their history. So it was going to take a lot to get them to budge on this particular issue. That was one thing. And the second thing was the historical record shows that the word plantations doesn't actually refer to slavery. And that was the chief concern for folks who wanted to change the name of the state. They were worried that it invoked painful memories of slavery, but actually it had nothing to do with slavery.
So Rhode Island is officially the state of Rhode Island and Providence Plantations.
That's correct.
Now, on the governor's race, this received a lot of attention in part because it's the first time the state elected an independent governor. Tell us a little about Lincoln Chafee.
Yes, Lincoln Chafee, son of John Chafee, a former governor and senator from Rhode Island. He was the mayor of the city of Warwick for some time, and then went on to replace his father when his father died in the U.S. Senate. Voted out of office in 2006 in a Democratic wave. He was a Republican at the time. He subsequently quit the Republican Party, trashed the Bush administration at every turn, and endorsed Barack Obama for president. So he had actually been an independent for some time before the gubernatorial race rolled around. And yes, he is indeed the first independent elected in the state as governor.
And he didn't switch parties just for the sake of practicality.
He says that it was a principled move, that he had, you know, some real objections to the direction of the Republican Party under President Bush and Vice President Dick Cheney. And most folks believe him. He ran as his father ran as the man you can trust. And his slogan this time around was Trust Chafee. Perhaps the only politician in America who could put trust me signs in lawns, but it worked for him.
All right. Then there was this moment in the race that we have a piece of sound from.
I never asked for President Obama's endorsement. He could take his endorsement and really shove it, as far as I'm concerned.
Now, that was from a Democrat. That was from Democratic Rhode Island gubernatorial candidate Frank Caprio. Tell us why he told Obama to shove it.
Frank Caprio was, from the start of this race, actually outflanked on the left by Lincoln Chafee. Chafee had support from unions, environmentalists, folks who've kind of reflexively backed the Democrat for decades and decades. They were backing Chafee this time around. Caprio was running as a centrist, even flirting with the Republican Party for a while. And as the Republican candidate in this race, Jon Robitaille, started to surge at the end of the campaign, he felt the need to kind of dig into Robitaille's base to get some more centrist and conservative voters. And he took this opportunity to lash out at the president. I don't know if shove it was in his prepared remarks, but certainly his criticism of the president was a calculated move, as was everything in his campaign.
Any sense that he regrets having said that at this point?
He came out and officially apologized for it. That was just before Bill Clinton showed up to campaign for him. So whether it was a sincere apology or something that had to be done to smooth the way for Clinton's entry, I don't know.
And as you said, there was a last-minute surge by the Republican candidate as well, Jon Robitaille, but ultimately was not successful.
Yeah, he kind of came out of nowhere. He was the chief communications man for the outgoing Republican governor. No one knew much about him, but in the end, he came very close to winning the race.
David, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
David Scharfenberg is the news editor of the Providence Phoenix.